Let's listen to children sing patriotic songs.
That's right. All of us. I see.
Let it ring, baby. Let that freedom ring.
Ring, freedom.
Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it?
Oh, they're gone.
Fascist.
I beg your pardon.
System of government characterized by extreme dictatorship. Seven across.
Oh, I see. It's fascism.
Fascism. Wonderful.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
Fossilized evidence reveals the Spazosaurus was the largest doofus ever to roam the Earth. Michael Bay announces he's directing a romantic comedy focusing on a love story between two explosions. And a new tandem mobility scooter is released. This is the Onion Week in Review, dammit, and we're going to need you to demonstrate a little decorum. Got it? This week, economists confirmed that the booming tear gas industry continues to lead the world's economic recovery. Financial experts confirmed that the growing demand for tear gas in countries like Turkey, Brazil, and Greece has increased over 20% annually over the past few years, and is anticipated to continue playing a major role in the world economy.
The market for tear gas just keeps sustaining itself and growing. We can only hope that more people demand tear gas in the coming months, and the recovery will be here sooner than we thought.
Researchers at the Harvard Institute for Advanced Studies confirmed this week that the universe, long known to be a heartless and unforgiving place, is actually far crueler and more uncaring than previously thought, citing data that includes phenomena like earthquakes, disease, famine, and man's inhumanity to man. Physicists reported that they were able to conclusively prove the universe is exponentially growing harsher and more meaningless than has ever been speculated before.
Our calculations suggest that not only is misery and the general indifference to human suffering far more vast than we ever thought, but such mitigating factors as love and care play an essentially insignificant role in the general order of the universe.
This Tuesday, 10-year-old leukemia patient and Houston Astros fan Danny Kelvin announced he was going to hold on until the team developed a player actually worth meeting. Kelvin, who was diagnosed with cancer in June 2012, told reporters he planned to get by for a few more months until whenever the Astros had a player who made more than 30 home runs during the season and had some genuine prospects.
It would be kind of nice to meet an Astros player that's actually half decent. Honestly, I'd settle for a meet and greet with a guy who can just hit a double. I guess I'll just have to stay strong and fight the disease for a few more seasons.
Kelvin later added he has, quote, absolutely no interest in meeting the injury-prone losers playing for the Texans either. And in local news, a new progressive charter school has no students. In other news, two lovers become lost in a fog. A Facebook friend is apparently under the impression that Ron Paul is still running for a major federal office. And Atlanta Braves player Justin Upton realizes he's been at bat for 4 hours. We hope this provided a brief reprieve from the shrill, murderous voices perpetually echoing inside your head.
What do you want to tell Mommy today? What do you want to say to Mommy?
Oh! Well, I see you got them snakes and sparklers, but where's good stuff, man?
Good stuff? This is the good stuff. Snakes and sparklers.
Are you nuts, dude? You need stuff to explode! Go boom!
Why is that good?
What? You might as well ask, why is the tree good? Why is sunset good? Why are boobs good? Man, firecrackers. You stick them in mailboxes, you drop them in toilets, you shove them up bullfrogs' ass.
I would never do that, because I'm going to be a veterinarian.
Well, there you go. Someone shoves an M80 up a bullfrog's butt, blows him to pieces. He comes back to you to fix it. You win twice, brother. It's good biz. So you're going to tell me that you don't have no black cats, no Roman candles, or screaming memes?
No.
Oh, come on, man. You don't got no lady fingers, buzz buttles, snicker bombs, church burners, finger blasters, gut busters, zippity-doo-dahs, or crap flappers?
No, I don't.
You're gonna stand there, owning a fireworks stand, and tell me you don't have no whistling bungholes, no spleen splitters, whisker biscuits, honky lighters, hoosker-doos, hoosker-don'ts, cherry bombs, nipsedazers, with or without the scooter stick, or one single whistling kitty chaser?
No. Because snakes and sparklers are the only ones I like.
Well, that might be your problem.
It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. But I ain't up to my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot.
At least one person has died and several others are missing after a freight train carrying crude oil exploded into a giant fireball in a small Canadian town. The driverless train derailed and crashed into the streets of Lagmanatique, sending flames hundreds of feet into the air, engulfing cars and destroying up to 30 buildings. Around 1,000 people were evacuated from their homes, and local media said that between 40 and 80 people were still missing. Four of the 73 pressurized tanker cars blew up when the train came off the rails, sending locals scrambling for safety.
It was raucous. It leaped. There were big balls of fire above the cafe. We jumped over the railing. We crossed the street, and just in the time it took to cross the street was filled with fire. It was a river of fire.
Huge clouds of thick black smoke were still rising from the Quebec province several hours after the disaster, and police fear that the death toll will rise.
It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to cool with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. But brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot. According to the Kinsey Report, every average man you know much prefers his lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Pants for romance is not.
In the distance, a plume of smoke rises from the fuselage of a Boeing 777 after it crashed in San Francisco and burst into a ball of flame. Two people were killed and nearly 200 injured when the Asiana Airlines plane came down as it attempted to land at the city's international airport on Saturday. And as this amateur footage shows, airport passengers watched in horror as flames engulfed the plane's hull, sending a mushroom of acrid smoke miles into the air. Inside the stricken plane, which had taken off from South Korean capital Seoul, terrified passengers fled for their lives, jumping down inflatable slides to escape the fires.
But the tail, boom, tail hit the runway, and there was a big bang, and I guess it broke off, and that's when the Ford of the plane came down, and as it came down, it kind of like flipped from the back to the front, and it just spun on the runaway. And when it did the spinning, then it came and it landed where it's right now, and then you could hear fire start burning.
While the cause of the tragedy is yet unclear, Asiana Airlines chiefs claimed mechanical failure was not to blame, and the FBI said terrorism had also been ruled out. An investigation has now been launched into the tragedy in a bid to answer the many questions as to how one of the world's largest airlines could have crashed in such a devastating manner.
'Cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too, too darn hot.
Thank you.
to coo with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. But brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot. According to the Kinsey Report, every average man you know much prefers his lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Gob for his squad, a Marine for his queen, a GI for his cutie pie is not, 'cause it's too, too, too darn hot.
As Americans gather at the nation's historic landmarks on this July 4th holiday, a disturbing Inspector General's report reveals a U.S. government agency, which is supposed to protect all of us, can't even keep track of its guns. CNN's Brian Todd has details.
Wolf, as you can see all around me, this is a day when all eyes are on America's iconic symbols and monuments. Tens of thousands of people flocking here to the National Mall. But there are also serious new questions about the police force that is supposed to safeguard all these people. They're tasked with protecting millions of visitors to America's monuments each year. But a new report says the U.S. Park Police does a lousy job of accounting for its own weapons. The Interior Department's Inspector General says the Park Police has lost track of thousands of weapons, rifles, machine guns, handguns, through sloppy record keeping. In its report, the IG says it found, quote, credible evidence of conditions that would allow for theft and misuse of firearms.
Could the United States Park Police maybe do a better job of inventory control of their weapons? Yes. But are their guns just out there on the streets because of their poor record keeping? No.
In fact, there's no indication that guns belonging to the Park Police made their way into the hands of criminals. But the report found that hundreds of guns that were supposed to be melted down never were and were left unaccounted for, and that at least two officers took guns home without permission. The report says Park Police commanders, including Chief Teresa Chambers, have a, quote, lackadaisical attitude toward firearms management.
The Park Police didn't provide anyone to go on camera with us and said Chief Chambers wasn't available. But its overseer, the National Park Service, issued statements saying that it's troubled and disappointed by the report's findings. The Park Service director saying he, quote, has no tolerance for this management failure, and that he's taken immediate steps to order the implementation of the report's recommendations to tighten up the weapons records.
I spoke with Ian Glick, president of the Park Police's Fraternal Order of Police.
All the weapons are accounted for, every weapon, every stick of ammo, everything is accounted for, but it's not accounted for in the National Park Service weapons inventory computer system. It is accounted for internally.
The Park Service would not respond to that assertion. There's at least one specific account in the report that's in dispute. It says a former park police chief carried a police-issued handgun long after he retired, which he wasn't supposed to do, and that it was confiscated later by another former park police official. The Washington Post, which first reported this story, identified that former park police chief as Robert Langston, and a knowledgeable government source confirmed that to CNN. But when we caught up to Langston...
Did a former park police weapons and tactics official ever confiscate a weapon from you at any time?
No, there was never a weapon confiscated from me.
Langston showed us a document saying he legally transferred his weapon from the park police to his new job with the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He says he turned the weapon in when he retired from that job.
When we asked the Inspector General's office about that, they said they'd never seen Langston's document, that it was the job of the Park Police to account for that. The National Park Service didn't respond to that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going around. stop the world and let me on.
The other big story we're following tonight, a Snohomish County Sheriff's Sergeant is under arrest in a prostitution bust.
Denver police say that he was tipping off naughty baristas about undercover investigations in return for sexual favors. He's been booked into the Marysville jail for conspiracy to promote prostitution. The bust came after a lengthy investigation that culminated today when Everett police raided 8 Java Jugs and Twin Peaks coffee stands.
It's the one time baristas at this Java Jugs coffee stand on Highway 99 in Everett don't want you to look at them. Inside the crime scene tape, officers interviewed them as they tried to hide their faces from our camera. In all, police say 7 women, ages 21 to 24, were detained and could face charges for lewd conduct and prostitution. Along with a manager and the owner of the coffee shops, a 51-year-old woman, who detectives say made more than $1 million in 2012. But it's the arrest of a Snohomish County Sheriff's Sergeant that's so stunning. 58-year-old Daryl O'Neill, a 30-year veteran, is accused of having sex with the owner and the manager inside the stand while on duty. And even worse, he's accused of tipping off baristas on undercover investigations.
Anytime we become aware of a law enforcement officer who breaches the trust of the community and the trust of those of us that are working in this profession, we're going to take very swift action. And that's what we've done in this case.
O'Neill is facing charges of conspiracy to promote prostitution and official misconduct. He was arrested while on duty.
My dreams are shattered, don't you see? Now you no longer care for me. I miss the wonder of your kiss. How could you leave me here like this?
Shocking allegations. A former police officer from Monroe is accused of child molestation. Detectives say he had a sexual relationship with a girl who was just 14 when it started. They also say he had child porn on his computer. Steve Kiggins went to see him.
Sources tell us that Carlos Martinez was molesting the family's babysitter. Now, investigators have interviewed dozens of potential witnesses, but they think there could be more victims out there.
Get off my property.
Are you Carlos?
Get off, yes, this is my property. Get off, please.
Carlos Martinez didn't like our cameras on his Monroe property. The Washington State Patrol says the former Monroe police officer did terrible things to a 14-year-old girl nearly 10 years ago.
We have reason to believe that there are additional victims that either we may have interviewed that have moved on with their parts of their life. And victims that we may not have interviewed or may not have identified yet.
Snohomish County prosecutors charged Martinez with voyeurism, third-degree child molestation, and the sexual exploitation of a minor after investigators say they found child porn on his computer.
Stop the world and let me out. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost. So stop the world and let me off.
Tonight, the State Patrol says it was indeed a real pipe bomb that forced the evacuation of Port Townsend's swimming pool, library, YMCA food bank, and even the police station. A custodian at Blue Heron Middle School found the device and brought it to the police station in his car. Nearby buildings were cleared while the State Patrol blew up the bomb. Unbelievably, it had been gathering dust in a science classroom since a student brought it in the 1990s. It took 3 hours to clear the scene.
As we approach our country's birthday on July 4th, we want to highlight the greatness of America.
Yesterday, huge day, the George Zimmerman trial.
Coming up, a crucial day in the George Zimmerman trial.
The George Zimmerman trial is eating up a lot of time on cable television.
And the trial that's got America entranced.
We are watching with great interest.
The jury is not yet seated. As soon as this trial begins in earnest, we will take you there.
If I can figure out how to do this.
All right, we are going to take a very quick break here, but we were going to come right back.
Once again, you're watching the George Zimmerman trial, watching every minute of this trial. Continuing coverage of the George Zimmerman trial here
have
on MSNBC.
Spoken?
Let's go right back to the trial. Let's take a listen.
Have a moment, Your Honor.
The defense is taking a moment, and so are we.
We're going to take a moment, too. We'll be right back.
All right, so taking a little breather here.
Now we're officially in recess. Whenever you see the great seal of the state of Florida, we're officially not going to broadcast any more pictures from the courtroom.
I want to take you back now to live testimony.
We're listening to the George Zimmerman trial. Let's listen in.
30 minutes now from the restart of the George Zimmerman murder trial.
We will take you back to the George Zimmerman trial when it resumes.
George Zimmerman's trial set to resume any moment now.
Following key testimony in the second-degree murder trial.
We are watching and we are waiting.
Quick break. Back after this.
Back to the George Zimmerman trial.
Continuing coverage of the George Zimmerman murder trial.
Full coverage
of the Zimmerman trial.
They are still in recess. Well, this is a bit tedious, isn't it?
Live continuous coverage of the George Zimmerman murder trial.
Inside the George Zimmerman trial.
Waiting for the George Zimmerman trial to resume. The jury is still not in the room. Just live to the courtroom right now.
What, if anything, did we learn today?
I thought it was all about puppies or something like that.
The court has adjourned for the day. What are we expecting tomorrow?
Stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost. So stop the world and let me off.
Now, hard to imagine this could happen, really. A pyramid in Peru, which has stood the test of time over the last 4,000 years, has been pulled to the ground by property developers. The pyramid's close to the capital, Lima. It was one of the country's oldest archaeological sites. Denise Hammack has more.
All that is left of a 6-metre-tall pyramid. El Paraíso is thought to have been a religious and administrative centre built long before the rise of the Inca culture encountered by the Spanish conquerors. Now, this building, which is more than 4,000 years old, is rubble, torn down allegedly by real estate developers in an effort to clear the land.
These people hoped that we would leave the area. They made a series of bonfires that impeded visibility. When the machinery started making noise and shifting earth, we went to check it out. The site's guard went to have a look, and workers for the real estate company surprised him and barred his way.
El Paraíso is located in agricultural fields just north of Lima. 12 pyramids were found at the site, where preservation work began last year. The authorities are pressing charges against two real estate companies who reportedly also tried to destroy another two pyramids at the site. If found guilty, those responsible face up to 8 years in jail and fines of more than $13,000.
Here's sunshine, fall on me. Won't you tell me when the hour is late? Tell them old crows, won't fly away. Tell the darkness that you ain't no slave. Here's sunshine. I told that man,
hearts that ain't done nothing. These two hands. See, there ain't no blood. Ain't no blood on my hands. It stains the gun. Love will cover me, man. The sunshine. Follow me, won't you guide me, oh, till I can see, till the old crows want to fly away, until the darkness that you ain't no slave.
What do you read, my lord?
Words. Words.
Words.
Words, words, words. We can't think of civilization without them. From Shakespeare's time and before, man has used words to communicate with his brothers. He has put his private thoughts into words in order to be understood, and he has learned a great deal from the spoken and written words of others. Love them or hate them, we cannot conceive of life and existence without words. Since the age of the bard, our history has been graced by many wordsmiths, many poets and sages, who plumbed the depths of existence and put their sublime thoughts into words for the benefit of mankind. From Dante to Cervantes, Blake to Rilke, Charles Dickens to Thomas Hardy, T.S. Eliot and Philip Larkin, to Wallace Stevens and Sylvia Plath and Ted Hughes. From Friedrich Nietzsche to Fyodor Dostoevsky. And on to the present day's literary geniuses. We can only conceive of what our world would be like without the gifts brought to us by words and language. We have music, but we also have the great lyricists whose mastery with words is second to none. Bards can be of the present age as well as of the past. There's no end to the mysteries and miracles of words. As long as we exist, language will continue to evolve and encapsulate the experiences of all. Our relationship with words begins early in life. Soon after we take birth, we learn to form basic syllables and words. We also learn how to write words on paper and attribute sounds to the enigmatic geometric shapes of our alphabet. Right from the beginning, we find that we and our environment are both figuratively made of words. We can also learn that certain words carry more weight than others. Some mean more to a man than others. Some mean more to a race or culture than others. We also find that words can be invented. They too can be new and improved over time. We also learn that words and their meanings can be abused. They can be reconfigured and skewed to suit an agenda, and can serve the purposes of anyone who has the skill to use them for malign purposes. The very same words that are used to inspire and uplift can also be used to confuse and waylay. If one possesses sufficient manipulative skill, one can twist and contort words and language like a Rubik's Cube. Men can be sophists and enchanters, using words as their weapons. They can control societies by way of the spoken word and ensure their own despotic rule by little more than sophistry. The dark pages of history reveal to us what horrors have been committed by way of words. The modern media could not operate to control entire populations without words. They work with words and language to communicate to us whatever the leaders decide, and to expertly instill the manufactured political propaganda that must be instilled into the minds they have access to on a daily basis. The result they are looking for is mass consensus and political apathy. If the average person believes their ideas about the world are of their own making, so be it. All the better for the media moguls and the controllers. Close examination of words and language and the power they bestow puts us in touch with the criminal history of mankind. We see what damage has been done on both an individual and a social context. The atrocities perpetrated against the body and mind of man extends to the domain of religion. The religious establishment derives the vast majority of its power from its particular idiosyncratic manipulation of words and their meanings. In the book of John, we read that, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So, in essence, we are told that the Word is literally the Creator, the creative force in the universe that brought into being everything we see and know. This is surely one rather impressive concept. When it comes to religion, we can see just how words have the power to affect the progress of civilization. Tell a man that his moral misdemeanors will be completely forgiven and erased by the church or by his God, and chances are that you have given birth to a man who will speak like an angel but act like a devil. A man who will forever be seeking the easy way out of every problematic situation. A man who will be reluctant to take personal responsibility for his life. And a man who will live forever under the authority that has offered him the panacea that eases his path and brings promises of otherworldly glory. The same source, the same book, can promise redemption from sin, and also declare everyone who does not believe in the book's hyperbole to be an infidel, deserving of death. The same book can deflect a man or woman from looking at themselves as they truly are, and can allow them to also stockpile words to use as weapons against those who think or act differently. That's right, words can make even a simple man into a dictator in his own right. Every dictatorship in history was conceived of and bolstered by the so-called intellectuals. The time is always right to reintroduce ourselves to the power and magic of words. The time has come for us to again re-examine the meaning of many words that we have grown so used to and familiar with. Many words have been put before us in a skewed and disingenuous manner. What we know about the words we use is what we know about ourselves. To name a thing is to own a thing. To speak a thing's name is to have power over that thing. This was known to the sorcerers and magicians of the earliest civilizations, and it is no less true today. Let's end by re-examining just a few key words, what I call talismanic words, to see what kind of emotions and thoughts they stir in us, and whether or not we've seen and heard them aright. First, a word from the enchanters.
Liegt die Zukunft des deutschen Volkes, wenn wir selbst dieses deutsche Volk emporführen durch eigene Arbeit, durch eigenen Fleiß, eigene Entschlossenheit, eigenen Trotz, eigene Beharrlichkeit, dann werden wir wieder emporsteigen, genau wie die Väter einst auch Deutschland nicht geschenkt erhielten, sondern selbst geschaffen mussten.
Die Partei This eagle's place is in the sky. She's still got a lot of flying to do. You can see it in her eye, though she's cried a bit for what we've put her through. She soared above the lifted lamp that guards sweet freedom's door. In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar once more. Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar.
But this is one of the things that became prevalent, was understanding that the king, by grant, never actually gave up title to the land. It was specifically set up in the treaty. See, those men actually ran out of money. They had to negotiate peace, and the peace had to be negotiated not just with Great Britain. It was negotiated between Great Britain, the King of France, the King of Spain, and the King of the Netherlands and Holland, and different ones. It was more international than people realize. When you read the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which was the document that ended the war, see, here again, understanding the construct, the war didn't just end and everyone go home. They actually sat down and negotiated a contract, which we call a treaty. And this said, okay, we're agreeing to these terms, and we're all coming together for our mutual benefit and mutual advantage and all those kind of things to happily restore, quote, the good concourse that used to exist. And this was when the king agreed to the land grant. The king who had given those grants, the king of Great Britain, he agreed that they were sovereign, that he would call them sovereign, that they now actually owned the land, that they possessed title to the land, and that they were treated among the family of nations now, as it states in the Law of Nations. Here again, understand, when they put something like the Law of Nations in their documentation, it's because they understand it, and they have read it, and they're going to follow it, and they're going to make sure everyone else follows it. If you look at the notes on the State of Virginia by Thomas Jefferson, which were voluminous, you can actually look it up at Virginia's library online. It's called virginia.edu. And under 13, there's talks about the Constitution, which was the Constitution of Virginia. And you will see the land grants in there, how the king held the land in what was called common suckage, meaning he still had title. He was the grantor. They were the grantee. And under grantor-grantee law, the grantor is still in control. And there were many times when the king would actually take the land grant away from whoever they didn't like and give it to someone else they did like. It's not just property. It's also your rights, because in law, constitutional law, and in international law, it says that civil rights are granted. Well, that which is granted can be ungranted. And I have 9 cases of case law where they will actually ungrant your civil rights and prosecute you and actually can charge an innocent person for a crime that never occurred. The Treaty of Paris, which was called the Definitive Treaty of Peace, was between King George and the United States of America, meaning the 55 men, the 13 states. And you have to understand who King George is, and it explains who King George is in the treaty. It says King George was the King of Great Britain, France, and Ireland. He was the Duke of Luxembourg and Brunswick, and he was the Arch-Treasurer and Prince-Elector of the Holy Roman Empire. One of the things that puzzled me about the treaty was that, how did King George get to be the King of France? I thought King Louis was the King of France. There was a hierarchy of kings in Europe, and a suzerain is one king that owes fealty to another king. So the true King of France was King George, and it meant that King George was admit that King Louis was sovereign in his domestic affairs over France, but he was not sovereign in his international affairs. That means he couldn't go negotiate treaties and make deals like he made with the United States of America without getting King George's permission, because King George was the true king of France that he owed fealty to. To boil it down into basics, it gives a land boundary of what their lands are, which were from the St. Lawrence River across all the way down over to the Mississippi, down to the Gulf of Mexico, and over through Florida to, not to the tip, but to through the St. Mary's River. And that's the land boundary. So he agreed that they now had the land, and he surrendered title, basically saying, okay, you want me to call you sovereign? I'll treat you as sovereign. However, in Article 4, it states, all bona fide debts heretofore contracted shall meet with no lawful impediment. And since they had not paid King Louis, and since King Louis was subservient to King George, King George was basically saying this: you can have the land, just make sure you pay me the debt. If you read the history, this was what astounded me about the Articles of Confederation, because a lot of people had talked about how the Articles were such a good form of government of the United States of America and so forth. And when I started reading, you actually find that the states were, under the Articles of Confederation, they were at war with each other. It says in history that they were having tariff wars. They were not showing up for their Congress meetings. Five states would show up, eight would not. So they weren't even honoring their own agreements to actually run a proficient government. And in the course of that, they violated three treaties, international treaties, and they also violated the Treaty of Paris, which was where they agreed to pay the king. So they were not paying the king. They violated those treaties. And George Washington wrote a letter to John Jay at that time in 1786, and he said, what are we going to do with these 13 disunited states? They're not paying their requisitions to the king. And he said, these things cannot go along in this train forever. And the reason they couldn't was because Britain was starting to encroach back on their borders to take everything back.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar, soar with healing in her wings, as the land beneath her sings. Only God, no other king. Let the mighty eagle soar. Only God, no other kings. Let the mighty eagle soar. Thank you and God bless you.
Hello, I'm Michael Tesarian. In my article entitled The Constitution Con, I emphasize that the United States has always been a colony of Britain, or more correctly, a vassal state, owned and controlled by the British Crown. In the article, I wrote of the devious and elaborate ruses employed by the royal families of Britain and Europe to ensure that Americans would believe themselves free and sovereign, when in fact they are anything but. I named the names and described how various court-appointed lieutenants, such as Benjamin Franklin, Roger Livingstone, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, Robert Morris, Nicholas Biddle, Gouvernier Morris, and many others, set about undermining the freedom of Americans. They and their ideological descendants have succeeded in bringing ruin to the Americas. The presidents of recent history have been little more than their political offspring, continuing the nefarious machinations set into motion by King George III and the chief executive officers of the British Crown Corporation. This knowledge concerning the Constitution Con has been researched and broadcast by several men. Their works on the subject are listed at the bottom of my article, which can be found by going to the Michael Tesarian website and clicking on the next button. Among the greatest researchers to expose the connections between the political figures of America and the British royals are Eustace Mullins, G. Edward Griffin, Dr. John Coleman, Anthony Sutton, Webster Tarpley, Jeffrey Steinberg, Lyndon LaRouche, and Ralph Epperson. Their works are highly recommended. It's important that their superlative works are distributed widely and placed in libraries and public locations so that the great deception that has brought America low can be exposed before all Americans who, despite their ignorance and apathy, deserve to know the truth. The relevant references within the work of the great researchers, which expertly exposes the British oligarchical control of America, must be disseminated over the internet for the same purpose. I myself will be working to make the works of these and other perceptive men available by way of my sites and forums. I've often publicly stated that astrologically speaking, we now occupy an age of awakening and revealing. I've predicted that we will, in this time, find out the truth concerning our origins and destiny. And I've also predicted that all manner of other lies will be exposed. Indeed, as every week goes by, new light is thrown on old mysteries and conundrums. This very month, new evidence concerning the Declaration of Independence has come to light. The Declaration of Independence officially came into being on August 2nd, 1776, 11 years before the signing of the U.S. Constitution on September 17th, 1787. In June of 1775, a group calling themselves the Continental Congress met in Philadelphia at Carpenter's Hall in order to establish a committee to draft the Declaration. Most of the men in the Congress were high-degree Freemasons. This included Thomas Jefferson, who, due to his prodigious intellect and erudition, was chosen to draft the Declaration. Then, on the famous date of July 4th, 1776, America's official birthday, a second Continental Congress met at the Pennsylvania State House, later to be known as Independence Hall, to approve Jefferson's work. That day, John Hancock signed the Declaration, whereas the other delegates, 55 of them, would sign it later, on August 2, 1776. The reason for the delay between July and August has to do with astrological timing. As we said, many of the delegates were Masons. But what is so suspicious about the Declaration of Independence, I hear you ask? In short, the recent dilemma concerns a single word written by the document's author, Thomas Jefferson. And that word is citizens. Not that there's anything untoward about that term. It's what has been discovered behind it. That's right. This word was apparently written over another word that has now, with the latest hyperspectral photographic technology, been discerned. And that word is subjects. No big deal, some of you might be saying. Well, I hope you're not saying that. Because the difference between these two words is, in fact, a very big deal. And that the word subjects was written into the Declaration by Thomas Jefferson himself is also a very big deal. But you retort, the mistake he made was corrected. It happened accidentally, when he wasn't thinking. Well, that can certainly be the answer to the problem. If you're the kind of person who believes that Thomas Jefferson would be the kind of man to make a spelling mistake on a much-previewed declaration, and then have to ask his mates for an eraser to scrub out his poor choice of words. Of course, now that the controversy has hit the headlines, the media laughs it off as a mistake. But let's pause again for a moment and think about the reports that have come across the ubiquitous media oracles. What is going on here, we might ask? We must open our eyes and ears and get the subtextual significance of what has happened. The news about the Declaration's strange wording is coming to the world now at this important point. We are meant to know that this word subjects is there. As Ralph Epperson rightly states in his video entitled America's Secret Destiny, we are meant to know that we have made ourselves into willing slaves or serfs, and that we have voluntarily divested ourselves of our rights. This travesty occurred because, as I've pointed out elsewhere, documents such as the Declaration and Constitution make use of talismanic words. These documents are talismanic documents, designed to enthrall us so that we voluntarily offer ourselves as subjects of the Crown. This is precisely what Americans have been duped into doing. We've not been forced into slavery, but wooed into it. We've accepted salt for sugar, merely because they look alike. Is it any wonder the cuisine tastes rotten? Moreover, the so-called mistake did not happen because old Uncle Tommy lost his concentration while peering out the window at some passing bit of skirt. No, he wrote one word in, purposely erased it, and then deliberately overwrote it with the new deceptive word. It was an exercise in ritualistic duplicity. But we may ask, why did he do such a bizarre thing? Why go to this kind of trouble? Well, it's the same kind of trouble that his masters and predecessors have gone to throughout the ages. In this one incident, we get to see the whole game. Because we're meant to see the man and the straw man behind it. We're meant to see and know what's going on in the world. The wars, conquests, rivalries, famines, upheavals, outbreaks of disease, ecocide, mass paranoia, and so on. We are meant to see it, and then we're meant to edit out the parts we don't care to see that cause us pain or which threaten our overall ideas about reality. Legally speaking and ritually speaking, the controllers play games with our minds. They know that we're under their control. They want us to know it too. And they also know when to conceal their power and tone down their machinations. They know how to enthrall and mesmerize us with talismanic words and phrases, with promises of this and that kind of utopia. They know how to dazzle and beguile us, and how to keep us exactly where they want us in their great hierarchical bastille. The two antithetical words were blended together on purpose. So do not believe the simplistic, if plausible, explanations offered by the media slime with their insider smiles. They're just playing you for fools. Old Tommy had one too many that night and forgot the difference between the words subjects and citizens. Yeah, that's right. Sure, Jefferson scratched out and overwrote the word subjects, but the fact is that he meant it to be there to begin with, and the media now want you to know it was there to begin with as well. Hint, hint. At this time, I can only remind the listeners that the oligarchs who drafted the Constitution and Declaration were members of the Solar Cult. More specifically, they were Atenists. Every major political or social event they have planned corresponds with significant astrological and astronomical occurrences. Fortunately, in the present age of awakening, these facts have begun at last to come into the public attention.
That's why we've got to get this done. We've got to get it done this year. We've got to get it done this year, both in the House and in the Senate. And we don't have any excuses. The stars are aligned. The stars are aligned.
The stars are aligned.
The Atenists, or Luciferians, as some researchers prefer to call them, were, for the most part, high-level Masons and Knights Templar. And, as we've said, many of them were directly connected to powerful British and European dynasties. And it's no different today.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, William Howard Taft, and President Barack Obama. One young girl traced them all back to one common ancestor.
They're all cousins and all grandsons of John Lackland.
12-year-old Bridge Ann D'Avignon discovered that all the U.S. presidents, except Martin Van Buren, are related to the former King of England, John Lackland Plantagenet.
Go and read our article entitled Weapons of Mass Destruction Found, and you'll see quotations from leading figures in the American political arena showing how they defer and toady to the British royals, doing whatever they may to acquire their disgusting favor and preposterous awards. Well, my dear subjects of the crown, that's it for me for now.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
It's nice that you can claim your clan to purebred pedigree descendancy, but middle passages mark the makeup of my amalgamated Afro-Boricua ancestry. I know it's kind of hard to see the motherland legitimacy in me, but I can't deny the fact that Yoruba songs lay in the lines of my mother's palms as she puts her hands up, offering up psalms, seeking the calm offered by God's son, cause when the day is done, the color of my skin still marks me as an alien in the country of my birth. I can't check myself into a box. I'd be ignoring mommy straight and poppy's nappy locks in me, the Chi-town, Midwest, windy city in me, the bebop, hip-hop, non-stop, salsa con saol, queen of soul in me, the growing up next door to Mexicanos with orale cabrones, tacos and tamales in me, the b-girl days while spitting flames and painting trains in me, the Taina con dolor in me, the Marvin Gaye and sweetened lemonade on sunny days in me, the descendancy that doesn't deny the darker shades of skin in me, the what in me? Yes! What you claim, you can't see. So descendancy, descend from your so-called position of privilege and see me for what I be, cause I be a Rican, a Chi-town, not a new Eurekan, a Chi-town, south side, Rican, simply seeking to see if I can fit in. I dare you to sit still in your chair and intellectualize what I can only make sense of by feeling. I see you're being blind, not seeing past the kinds of fabricated fictional fables, assaulted ancestral accounts. I should be calling your historical scribes ASAP, the way they stop the truth from being illuminated. Being fed to my generation, our youth are tired of being intimidated through tactics that are trying to force my assimilation, causing me to question my creation. You must have mistaken me for Hansel and Gretel, thinking I'd jump into the melting pot, always trying to place me in constant categorizations of populations. You're calling this civilization? My so-called pre-Columbian savage unenlightened ancestors had more humanity than your Microsoft Macintosh technology monopoly information highway, riding barebacks on the backs of underpaid third world women and children, 85 cents a day for making $100 Nikes, nuclear bomb dropping, immigrants stopping death by lethal electrocution, injecting lies of let me get my piece of the American apple pie dream into our children's minds. Society, let me order your new worlds and paint the White House brown, cause I'm going down, yes, I'm going down to the earth, searching my roots like Halley's, and I'm riding comets back to the past that becomes my future, that is my present, that is my now. I'm going back seeking my descendancy.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 it's real easy, man.